Two graduate students sit in a bedroom in Toronto in the late summer of 2012, late at night, with the lights low, looking at the back of a tower computer that has been opened on the carpet beside them. Inside the tower, screwed into two adjacent slots, are two consumer graphics cards. They are NVIDIA GeForce GTX 580 cards, the kind of card a teenager might save up to buy in order to play first-person shooters at very high frame rates. Each card retails for about $500. The two together cost about $1,000. They're mounted side by side, fans blowing, the small green status lights blinking quietly. The students are named Alex Krashevsky and Ilya Sutskever. Their advisor, a 55-year-old British computer scientist who has been working on this particular obsession for 40 years, is a man named Jeffrey Hinton. Hinton is, depending on whom you ask, the most patient person in the field or the most stubborn. He believes something almost nobody else in his profession still believes in 2012, which is that a particular kind of computer program called a neural network, modeled very loosely on the way neurons connect in a brain, can be trained to recognize what it is looking at in a photograph, given enough examples and enough computing power. He has been told, for most of his career, that this is a dead end. Krashevsky and Sutskever do not yet have careers to speak of. They are graduate students. They are running on those two graphics cards in that Toronto bedroom, a network they will eventually call AlexNet. The training takes weeks. The cards run hot. The room is loud. They're using a software framework written by NVIDIA called CUDA, released 5 years earlier in 2007, that lets ordinary computer code run, in parallel, across the hundreds of small processors built into a graphics card. The cards are not running graphics. They are running, in parallel, the millions of small multiplication and addition operations that a neural network is made of. A graphics card, it turns out, is extraordinarily good at this. On September 30th, 2012, the three of them submit AlexNet to a competition called ImageNet. The competition is one of the standard benchmarks in the field. The previous year's winner had achieved a top 5 error rate of 26.2% on a particular image classification task. AlexNet achieves 15.3%, almost half. The result is not just an improvement. It is, in a single afternoon, the moment the field changes direction. Within 3 years, every team in computer vision in the world will be using neural networks trained on graphics cards. Within 10 years, those networks will be writing emails for you, drawing pictures for you, summarizing meetings for you, and answering, in coherent paragraphs, almost any question you put to them. This is Rust, gently, a patient introduction to how computers actually work and to one particular language for talking to them. I am your host. This is episode 17, The New Shape of Compute. Today I want to tell you a story about what kind of machine your computer is becoming. By the end of this episode, you will understand why the computer in your phone and the computer in your laptop, and the computer in the data center where most modern AI lives, are all being built around a particular kind of chip that did not exist 20 years ago. You will see why the most valuable company in human history, by market capitalization, is a company that until very recently was best known for making graphics cards for video games. And you will hear for the first time the connection between everything we have built in this season and a particular programming language we have only mentioned occasionally. Let me back up to the chip. For most of the history of computing, the central processor of a computer was a single chip called a CPU. The CPU is fast at one thing at a time. It could do an enormous number of different kinds of operations in sequence, very quickly, one after the other. The chip in the laptop you're listening to this on is a CPU. It is doing one thing at a time, just very, very fast. A graphics card is not built that way. A graphics card has, instead of a single fast processor, hundreds and then later thousands of small slow processors working in parallel. Each one can only do simple operations, but they can all do them at the same time. If your job is to draw a picture on a screen where every pixel needs the same kind of arithmetic done on it, the graphics card is the better tool because each of its many small processors can be assigned one pixel, and they can all finish at once. In November 2006, NVIDIA announced a software framework called CUDA, which let programmers write ordinary code that would run in parallel across all those small processors. In June of 2007, they shipped the first card built explicitly for this kind of work, called the GeForce 8800 GTX. It was $600. It was advertised to gamers. Inside it, 128 small processors, each one capable of running general-purpose code. The chief architect was a young engineer named Ian Buck, recruited in 2004 after writing his Stanford PhD thesis on a topic he had called Stream Computing on Graphics Hardware. NVIDIA's chief executive, Jensen Huang, bet the company on the idea that graphics cards were not graphics cards. They were parallel computers that happened to be very good at graphics. For 5 years, very few people outside the graphics card industry took the bet seriously. The card was bought by gamers who wanted Crysis to run at 60 frames per second. The framework, CUDA, was used by some scientists doing physics simulations, by some researchers doing signal processing. It was a niche tool. It was not yet famous. Then AlexNet happened. And once AlexNet happened, the entire field of artificial intelligence reoriented itself around graphics cards. The reason was simple. A neural network is, mathematically, a giant pile of matrix multiplications. Each step of training a network is millions of small multiplications and additions, all of which can be done in parallel. The CPU does them one at a time. The graphics card does thousands at a time. The training that took weeks on two consumer cards in Krzyzewski's bedroom would have taken years on the best CPU available in 2012. The shift was not subtle. It was a difference of orders of magnitude. In March of 2013, Google quietly bought the small company Hinton and his two students had formed. Hinton split his time between Google and Toronto. Suits Kever went to Google Brain, and 2 years later he left to co-found a small research lab called OpenAI. Almost every name that matters in modern AI is somehow downstream of that Toronto bedroom and those two graphics cards. The architecture itself kept evolving. On June 12, 2017, a paper appeared on the academic preprint server called Attention Is All You Need. The lead author was Ashish Vaswani. There were seven co-authors. The paper introduced something called the transformer, which was a new way of structuring a neural network. The transformer turned out to be especially well suited to language. It would, within 5 years, become the architecture underneath every modern chatbot, every modern translator, every modern code assistant. In May of 2016, Google announced that it had been running a custom chip in its data centers for over a year called the TPU. The chip was built for one job, and one job only, which was to do the arithmetic that neural networks were made of. It was 15 to 30 times faster than a contemporary CPU or GPU on that work, and it used a small fraction of the power. Google had designed it, verified it, built it, and deployed it in 15 months. Apple, the next year, in September 2017, announced the A11 Bionic chip, which contained the first commercial neural engine in a smartphone, capable of 600 billion operations per second, used to run face recognition locally on the phone so that your face data never left the device. The shape of compute had changed. The chip in the corner of your phone is no longer a single fast processor. It is several chips working together. A CPU for the operations that have to happen one at a time. A GPU for the operations that can happen in parallel. An NPU for the operations that look specifically like neural network arithmetic. The same is true of the chips inside the data centers where most AI lives. NVIDIA's flagship chip in 2023, the H100, sold out for 11 months at a time with a list price of $30,000 per unit. for customers accounted for nearly half of NVIDIA's quarterly revenue. The company crossed $4 trillion in market capitalization. It is the most valuable company in human history. On November 30, 2022, a small research lab in San Francisco called OpenAI, the same lab Ilya Sutskev had co-founded 7 years earlier, released a chatbot called ChatGPT as what they called a research preview. They expected internally that maybe 100,000 people would try it in the first week. 5 days later, it had 1 million users. 2 months later, 100 million. By the end of 2025, 800 million weekly users. 2.5 billion prompts per day. Behind every one of those prompts, in a data center somewhere, a stack of H100 chips is doing the arithmetic. Now here is the part of the story I want you to hear carefully, because it is the bridge to everything we are going to do in the rest of this show. The chips are extraordinarily expensive. An H100 costs about $30,000. A cluster of them, the kind you need to serve a real AI product to real users, costs millions of dollars and rents by the hour. Every wasted millisecond on that chip is, in a very literal sense, money on fire. The software that runs on top of those chips, the software that decides which arithmetic happens when, that loads the model weights into memory, that handles the requests as they come in, that returns the answers to the users, has to be as fast as it can possibly be. There is no room for waste. For about a decade, that software was almost entirely written in Python, because Python was the language AI researchers knew, and because the slow parts could be hidden behind libraries that were themselves written in faster languages. That worked, more or less, while the world of AI was small. It does not work anymore at the scale AI has now reached. The serving infrastructure, the part of the system that takes your prompt and returns an answer, is being rewritten. The library that takes text and breaks it into the small units a model can read, called Hugging Face tokenizers, is now written in Rust. Tokenizing a billion words in Python takes days. The same job in Rust takes under 20 seconds per gigabyte. The format that model weights are stored in, called safeinsers, was rewritten in Rust because the previous Python format could execute arbitrary code at load time, which was a serious security problem. The framework that lets you run a model without any Python at all, called Candle, was written in Rust by the same company, Hugging Face, that built tokenizers and safeinsers. The production system that companies use to serve large language models to their customers, called Text Generation Inference, has a Rust component called the backend trait that different inference engines can plug into. The pattern across the entire industry is this. The model is written in Python. The model is served in Rust. The deeper into the inference path you go, the more the language matters. Rust is the language of the AI infrastructure layer. It is not the only language there, but increasingly, it is the language whoever cares about cost and latency reaches for. Three things to carry away from today. The first is that the CPU is no longer the only chip in your computer. The shape of modern computing is several specialized chips working together, and the most interesting of them, by a considerable margin, is the parallel processor inspired by graphics cards. That chip, more than any other, is the engine of the current technological moment. The second is that the modern era of AI began in a bedroom in Toronto in 2012 with three people and $1,000 of consumer hardware. It does not always require a research budget to start a revolution. Sometimes it just requires the right pair of cards. The third is that the infrastructure layer of AI, the place where money is being burned by the millisecond on the most expensive chips humans have ever built, is being rewritten. The language is being rewritten in is the one this show is named after. Next time on Rust, gently, we begin a new season. We're going to step back, all the way back, and look at the artifact at the center of everything we have talked about so far. Source code. The lines of careful writing that get transformed by a long and patient process into the programs that run on every CPU, every GPU, every TP we have just discussed. We're going to treat source code as the object it is, ask what it really is, where it came from, and what it means to keep it. Until then, take good care of yourself. I will see you in the next one.